Scarpins Audio. Hey guys, welcome to another episode of View from the Cheap Seats. We have the Sklar Brothers, Rand and Jay, and we have a fantastic guest today.
Oh, it's a basketball show today.
It's basketball heavy because we just finished the NBA Finals and the top 75 or 76 players in the NBA history were...
For the 75th anniversary of the NBA.
All put out, and we sort of discussed that with our guest, the great Wayne Fetterman, who did a Pistol Pete Maravich book. He knows his NBA so well. He has one of my favorite bits ever about David Stern being more like a rabbi than a
More like your uncle.
I thought a rabbi. Anyway,
He's very avuncular.
Yeah, so he's fantastic. We get into all of that with him. And so, in the same spirit, our top take of the day, we got to talk about Draymond Green, because now, and we talk about it a little bit with Wayne, but now the discussion needs to come to be, and I did some digging on this, and I don't know how I feel, Jay, and I want you to make a case either way. Is Draymond Green a Hall of Famer? Because they were talking about it a little bit. He did not have a particularly great series, but he was, how about this? He did not have a particularly amazing series, and yet I feel like he's the reason they came back and won that series.
So, yes, I agree. So there are two types of players that I think make it in the Hall of Fame. There are guys who rack up stats like nobody's business, guys who just, you know, don't have championships but are just dominant. Your Karl Malones of the world, your John Stocktons of the world. I know that's the same team. Your Dominique Wilkins of the world, just human highlight films. Guys whose talent was...
Chris Paul
will be. Yeah, will be. Hall of Fame caliber, just no championships behind it. Then there are guys who
possess the championship DNA,
who have the championship DNA, who are not just role players but core members of championship teams. And he was. You could argue even his dumb decision to get suspended for a game gave Cleveland that win in the middle of their run.
Yeah,
the year that they had the greatest,
for sure,
by far the greatest record of all, not by far, but the greatest
one
record.
Game.
One game. But they had the greatest record of all time in a regular season.
And so I was trying to think, Jay, who can we compare him to?
There aren't a lot of comps, and that's another reason why I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame. I think he is his own category.
Right.
Because he hits timely, important threes, just like Robert Horry did. So but he was more a part of the team than Robert Horry. He plays defense like awesome defenders often do.
He locks down one of your best guys. Yeah.
He'll lock down your best guy. And the biggest thing that Draymond Green does for you as a team is he is the playground. He's the bully on your time. He's the guy on your team
when Boston
who gets into
was
under
pushing
their skin.
Them around. He was the one who pushed back.
I'm going to push back. Get behind me, team.
Right.
And I am going to be a bulldog out here, and I'm going to knock
people
over. I'm
going to put
you
on the shoulders of my attitude and push it forward. And again, I don't like Draymond Green because he went to Michigan State, but that's just me personally.
Whatever. I'm going to respect the game.
But I respect him 100%, and I respect what he does for that team. I was
so he's like one of those eye test Hall of Fame guys that you got to
kind of give it to. So I'm looking at Rodman, and I'm like, how many rebounds did Rodman have? Well, he had almost 12,000 rebounds in his career, in a 10-year career. Okay, he averaged double-digit rebounds, I think 10 of those years, in a 13-year career.
Amazing.
He led the league in rebounding, several times, 7 or 8 years, 6 to 8 years in there.
But here's the difference.
Draymond never did that.
But here's the difference between Rodman and Draymond. Rodman would disappear for 4 days in Vegas, right? And you don't know where he is or what he's doing.
Draymond is calling guys on his own team out to get them to play
better.
That's
right. That's
right. He calls people to the floor, whereas other people had to call Rodman to the mat
and be like,
into
come back, we need you.
So Draymond only has 4,700 total rebounds in a 10-year career. He's averaging 6.7 per game. It's good.
Not bad.
Got more assists overall than Rodman, more steals per game. He led the league once in steals. I mean, he's not the most dominant person in his position,
but
he is maybe the most dominant attitude player ever. Like, to me, Bill Laimbeer was that attitude guy. He never really had the stats. He was really good. They won 2 championships. Draymond Green has won 4 championships, has been there 5 times, right? 5 or 6, I think 5 times. So 4 out of 5. He's got 4 rings. He almost has a whole handful of rings. And I think they could do it again, number one, because I think Klay Thompson has another level that he's never gotten to. And the craziest thing is, I just think that Draymond Green could just come in as a positionless guy. There's this guy who could be
the center. He could be your forward. He could be
He's the heart and soul of your team. And I would say, would you rather have Russell Westbrook, who has way better stats than him, or Draymond Green on your team?
So I will answer with Draymond Green, and then I will also say, take Draymond Green off of all those Golden State teams, and I don't think they win four.
I don't think so.
I think maybe they win one or two. Maybe the year with Durant, when they were just so dominant, it was like, it's not even fair.
Doing it with defense that year.
And you don't need Draymond Green that year. But
Draymond made them tougher those years.
The other three times?
Also, Draymond Green is great if you're building a dynasty of new, younger players. Like, Draymond Green makes Andrew Wiggins a tougher player.
Draymond Green makes Jordan Poole work harder.
Work harder and doesn't take any shit from him. And so, like, when they move forward to the next generation and pass the baton, these old guys pass it to the new guys in Golden State, Draymond Green has set the table for how they are going to play in the future and set the tone. So, anyway, fascinating. We'll talk about this with Wayne Fetterman. He's our guest on it coming up. And then later in the show, we got a very special voicemail. This is View from the Chiefs. I'm so excited about this episode. Don't go anywhere. Hey, guys. Welcome back to the show. As promised, our friend, the great Wayne Fetterman, just a comic that we look up to, someone who knows his sports, has written books.
Someone we've played basketball with, someone who certainly loves the NBA.
Knows more about Pistol Pete than most people, than I would say some of Pistol Pete's family, probably, than about Pistol Pete. And we've tilled the soil of sports talk with this guy for so long. It's just so nice. We've had him on Dumb People Town recently because he participated in and helped produce the George Carlin documentary, which I highly recommend.
If you have not seen that on HBO,
we'll talk about it
must.
Later. I don't want to talk about it now. I want to talk about the NBA Finals with the great Wayne Fetterman. First of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to be here. So what is the name of this show?
View from the Cheap Seats.
Yes.
Our view from the Cheap Seats.
So
all of our views.
With a couple.
How many people have that were on the actual Cheap Seats show?
You were amazing. World's longest man.
Yeah. How many of those people have been on this show?
So many.
A lot.
Although there were a lot of people we had cast as actors who don't know a ton about sports. So, like, we would never have David Cross on this show because he's just not a sports
fan. Scott Aukerman.
Yeah.
Right. Appeared. Oh, really?
Scott Aukerman and Harris Whittles, may he rest in peace.
Right. He wasn't into
World's championship hugging championships.
Right.
Which, like, strong hugging, hard hugging.
Hard hugging.
That was a funny kid, huh?
Goddamn drugs. Anyway, so let's talk about the finals. They just wrapped up last week or the end of last week or this weekend.
With 75th anniversary.
So with a breath between the finals and now, was it a satisfying finals for you? How did you feel
about it? Well, as someone who's been watching it's not a league, it's an association.
It is association.
We talk about it every time.
Your association with it is that you have a very close connection with it.
Right. It's an association, unlike those other sports leagues.
Leagues.
So, yes, it was. I mean, I was rooting for Boston. Just I don't know why, but
did you like the players? Do you like how that team is constructed? Or you
feel bad for the city because they haven't won any championships?
Yeah, they've had a rough 20 years.
I like racism. I can't quite put
love
my finger
their fans.
Love their fan base. So.
Sure. It's a good fan base to get behind.
Yeah. I don't know. I was just like, but it was.
We felt that way about Boston in the 80s when we were St. Louis kids who didn't have a basketball team. We always rooted for Boston. Like, we didn't understand. We thought the Lakers and Showtime were just like this juggernaut of a team, and they were going to. We didn't realize the history of Boston just breaking their hearts throughout the 70s and 60s. We didn't get it.
Speaking of 60s, to me, one of the worst nicknames in all of pro sports.
Let's hear it.
Mr. Clutch.
Mr. Clutch. All right.
Yeah, I believe he lost seven game sevens or eight game sevens. He never won a game seven.
There's a time to change that. He could be clutch. If given the right circumstance, I mean.
Mr. Clutch? Okay. So maybe it was his driving.
Maybe he drove a stick shift car, and that's why he always stuck to clutch. Right.
You want an automatic? No.
No. He's Mr. Clutch.
Manual.
Mr. Manuel.
So, yes, it was. I mean, I just love the competition. I love how much the game has evolved.
It really has evolved.
Obviously, we're now looking at one of the top two point guards to ever touch a basketball.
I mean,
certainly
the best shooter in the history of the game.
And maybe the best shooter in the history of the game.
I can't even imagine anyone that you would put ahead of him.
Best under 6'2"
point guard.
Yeah,
I think he's the best
player.
The only other point guard in the
Isaiah
competition.
Thomas?
No, I feel is Magic Johnson.
And he was like a point forward, almost, so to speak.
Yeah, well, but, I mean, one of his advantage was he could see over so many people.
And but he was not a good shot. Did had a terrible shot.
Well, I mean, he shot a higher percentage than this guy you're talking about. What's his name? Curry?
Stephon Curry.
Again, Steph Curry's stats are pulled down a little bit because he shoots a lot of threes.
Right,
so,
from the distance that he shoots. Yeah.
But, yeah.
Magic Johnson was making a lot of layups. And so
making a lot of layups, and he always had a pretty good shot. I mean, it wasn't I think he was in the 30s for his 3-point shots.
No one was going out there on him. Like, they were letting him shoot
that shot. And he didn't really even have a jump shot.
He was sort of a set shot from like the side of his head. And so, but yes, of course. I think he goes.
But those two guys, I think now are in the conversation. It's the two best. But what do you think?
As Stockton, you got to throw in there. But I
never
don't want to put.
Never won never a chip. Won. They call it a chip.
A chip.
What is the difference between a chip and a ring?
It's a championship is condensed into chip.
That's what that is?
I think that's what it is.
Okay.
I think the chip. Never won a championship. We don't have time to say championship. It's like we need a vanity license plate. I can't fit championship on that. I just got to put chip on it.
Chip. Okay. All right.
So got a chip on my shoulder.
So he doesn't have a chip.
Right.
He doesn't have a chip.
That automatically puts
And he's anti-vax. That knocks him down even further.
And then
dummy.
Yeah, and then the only other ones are like maybe Steve Nash, who also never won
a chip. Yeah, Steve Nash.
Chipwich.
Yeah, I would say Steve Nash was
probably. He never ate a Chipwich.
Steve Nash was probably a more creative version of John Stockton. I mean, John Stockton was very creative and a good passer and whatnot. I mean, Jason Kidd was
a great
player.
Can I give you a couple
Tony Parker?
Tony Parker.
No.
But just because he was, I don't think he was ever first. He's French. Yeah, and that's the end of that
sentence. Enough. That's all you need to say. He smoke a cigarette and get the hell out of here.
I mean, come on. Smoke a cigarette and hit on a woman who doesn't want you to. All right, get out of here.
But very good with the escargot and incredible with
so good.
Wine.
All right, and discos.
What were you going to say? You were going to give us a different person.
No, that's John Stockton, all-time leader in assists and steals.
Right.
That's a pretty good double. That's a pretty good double whammy. That's a double vax right
that
there.
That is a double vax.
I want a good protection against he's penetrating virus.
I want to say he's vaccinated from being called the he's immune from being called the greatest point guard of all time because Steph Curry is taking his
Steph Curry's more of a winner, and Steph Curry is, you could argue, more clutch.
His 43 when they lost the first game. And then he goes to Boston and puts down the 43 points.
Oh, wait, I thought that was after when it was 2-3.
Was it?
Well, 2-1.
2-1. They were down 2-1.
Down 2-1.
So they had lost
one. Did you watch this finals?
I did, but I just remember they were down and they needed a win, and then Steph dropped 43.
Yeah. No, he's in.
It's an all-time great performance in a very hostile environment.
And there's no – and the best player on the Boston Celtics shot 37%. That's where we're at. So it's really
hard to you got to shoot the lights out.
And again, because he's not 6'7" or 6'9", he's not bullying his way.
His movement
has
to get him to
change his body.
He has definitely changed his body and bulked up. But when LeBron in those series, when they needed a basket, okay, when they needed a basket, and Jordan was leaving a little bit like this too. If he decided that he was going to drive on you, elevate, and go to the rim, he would either draw contact and make the shot and one, or he was going to dunk. And that's not part of Steph's game. So Steph's game
though,
is...
He can is creative getting to the rack, but I mean, nonetheless, he doesn't have that ability to throw.
Right, you're talking about basketball, not women's breasts.
Folks. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, because I'm incredible getting to the
you're
rack.
To that rack. Yes.
Was it weird that
You're more of an off-the-rack Nordstrom's.
Was it weird that Steph's dad, Del Curry, who I remember
brought
to the finals the ex-girlfriend of the man who brought his wife to the final, or he brought the ex-girlfriend of the man who is now dating his wife.
Oh, I see. Wow.
As a show of
I mean, who orchestrated this? Michael Jordan? I'm going to have the guy that beat me out on my high school team introduce me to the Hall of Fame.
I'm going to have sex with his wife because I want to really send him a message. I mean, that's really what Del Curry did.
Can I say this? This is another, again, we could talk for hours about this.
Yeah.
You know, Curry is not well-loved in the NBA.
He's not.
No. And one of the reasons he's not is most people who are in the league, in the show, or whatever they call the association,
whatever they call it.
You know, like had a struggle AAU.
He's Grant Hill.
Yeah. He's been a millionaire his whole life.
That's right.
He's like the and that he dominates on such and that he's so competitive.
Yeah, so this is the thing that really hurt Chris Webber.
Yeah.
In the Fab Five, and is why I feel like there was friction. Chris Webber wanted so much to have Jalen Rose's story. And Jalen had Jalen's story.
That's
and I
awesome.
Think like Chris yeah. Webber felt like he was a bit of an imposter on this
suburb
team.
Kid.
Yeah. Suburb kid. He kind of
Detroit Country Day.
But he was just an incredible player, but didn't have that story for the cred of what you're talking about.
Right. Well, my friend Howie Gold, he's a comedian. I don't know if you remember him. Mm. Because we talk basketball quite a bit. But we always say that the family emblem for the Chris Webber family should be Chris Webber on his knees pounding the floor after he misses a game-winning shot. Like yeah. That was like his whole thing. Like
I know, but it belies though.
Oh, he's great. He was great.
He was like, I mean, 20,000 points and 10,000 rebounds or something around both of those things. It's funny because the top of this show before you came on, which we have yet to record, there's a time whole thing here, but is all about what we think about Draymond Green and is he a Hall of Famer? The numbers 100% do not support it. I was trying to think of like a comp, and we talked about at the beginning in terms of Dennis Rodman is a bit of a comp, not a great shooter, energy guy, brings you all the intangible.
Ben Wallace is another one.
Ben Wallace. But you say to yourself, I didn't look up Ben Wallace's stats.
Robert Horry.
Robert Horry was just a shot maker.
He was less of a presence throughout the game.
He should be Mr. Clutch.
He should be Mr. Clutch.
Absolutely. He won seven of them. You're talking about someone who lost seven. He won seven.
Yeah. And hit big shots.
Big shot Bob. But I'm just saying, like, you know, I was looking into Dennis Rodman's stats. I'm like, how many times did Dennis Rodman lead the league in rebounding? First of all, seven or eight. 10 years in a row, he had double digits. He averaged double digits.
He was a savant. He was a rebounding savant.
He was 6'10".
No, he was not 6'10". I looked it up on the thing. If basketball reference statistics is wrong, they said he's 6'7".
There's no way he's 6'7".
Basketball reference said that he is 6'7". Okay.
I'm not going to look him up.
Like,
I think you misread it.
Fine. Draymond Green is 6'6". But I'm like, but there is something undeniable about what he brought that team. And to me, when the Celtics were beating them up in this series, I felt like Draymond, even though he wasn't...
Yeah, they say he's 6'7".
That's what I'm saying. So Draymond Green did what they needed to do, which was made them tough.
Long arms, though.
Yeah, he had long arms. He made a good wingspan, but he made them tough. Like, Draymond Green gave them the backbone.
He's the leader of that team.
He's the emotional leader of that team, where maybe Steph, for the very reason that you talked about...
And I actually thought... This is why I'd be a terrible GM.
Yeah.
I actually thought after the first three games, like, well, Draymond's just old now.
He's done.
This little thing, these little Patrick Beverly moves and all of this.
Yeah. Kinda, people's
annoying,
faces.
Yeah, all
right.
This, just like these kids are not going to, they're bigger and they're not. Yeah. And I was wrong once again, loud and wrong.
Loud and wrong and happy to admit it. Something that doesn't happen in the world of sports, but it is.
Very wrong. And he played another shitty game. Excuse my language.
Yeah, it's fine.
So, God.
So he's won.
He's definitely in the Hall of Fame.
He's won four championships. He's a defensive specialist. I don't know if he's been defensive player of the year. He probably has been nominated or
no. But he also hits threes. Like
his overall rebounds. He has less than 5,000 career rebounds in ten years. It's not great. So like from a pure numbers perspective, this is going to be one of those that the Hall of Fame is. You know, you looked at Sandy Koufax and what he did. I mean, just unreal numbers.
Who is this?
He played for Sandy Koufax.
The greatest
Jewish sports legend ever. He played for only a handful of years, but I'm saying if you looked at his winning totals, I think he won 160 games.
Because he shortened his career,
and so his numbers don't stack up with the Jim Cott even, or you know.
No, but that's
else.
A different thing. But even his averages do.
Unbelievable. He was dominant in a way
especially, he was
the best pitcher in the league. Well, for 7 years, it was Sandy Koufax, and no one could touch him, and he was
Bob Gibson was pretty close.
Gibson was 64 more to 72. Like he
felt like he
Gibson's
a little bit longer.
The year like 66. 67, I think, was the year that he like had a 1.12
ERA. They changed the mound after 67. So he was
building. Shortened the mound.
He was big in 64, big in 67, big in 68 when the Cardinals went to the World Series.
Now, were you upset when they mound shortened? You weren't even alive.
We weren't even alive. 72, we were alive. We could sense that something had been taken.
Something was different.
When we came out into the world, we're like, did someone... You know, you walk into a room and you're like, did you change? Is there a new lamp in here? And so there's
the lighting low in here.
Seems shorter to us. But I mean, so that's my question. Do people go look at Draymond and say, this dude was dominant from an energy, defense, spirit? You're the backbone of the team. Like, do we get a guy in just on that?
Mm-hmm. I think you do. I think it's a layup. To use a metaphor from another sport.
That Draymond Green probably wouldn't make because he's not that great offensively. But he would definitely complain to the ref that he got fouled on it and just continue. Like,
this is one other thing I like about Draymond. He's already transitioning to the TNT job.
Oh, my God.
I've never seen it at that level.
Oh, no. He's
set for life.
He will give it back to all those guys. They're going to have to build a bigger desk. We need a bigger desk. Barkley ain't going anywhere. Kenny the Jet.
That's not true. I think Barkley is thinking of retiring.
Let me ask you this. I mean this 100%, wholeheartedly. I really mean this 100% with the NBA on TNT crew.
Yeah.
I think Shaquille O'Neal should run for president in 2024. I think he would win. I think he'd be like the great. You don't even have to have a party, dude. Just run. Run for the Carnival
Papa
Cruise.
He saved Papa John's.
Run for the as the Carnival Cruise candidate. I don't care. Like, he is the most unbelievably likable person ever.
You don't like it. You're not into it. I mean, what?
I'm trying to make room for Draymond.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think Shaq's a great analyst, to tell you the truth.
He's got great information, I feel
I
like.
I think he
every time he opens his mouth.
Compared to
Kenny,
but they
all
do different things.
But so they each play a role. They do play a role. So
Barkley's gonna say whatever he's gonna say, some outrageous
stats are
thing.
Like free throws to Shaq. Like, he doesn't spend a lot of time on it, and he probably could spend more. But like Shaq will tell you, like, he'll be like, they don't respect that guy. And I'm like, wait, why, Shaq? Why do they not respect that guy? And he'll be like, you see how they all walked out of the huddle and two guys walked this way guy walked this way? They don't respect that guy anymore. And I'm like,
his finger on the pulse of what's going on is remarkable.
He knows what the players are feeling, and he does share that. Ernie keeps the ball rolling.
Traffic cop in the business.
Kenny gives you such detailed analysis, and I think Barkley gives really good analysis and also
from the gut
says things that very large gut. You don't expect him to say. Yes.
So
I mean, obviously,
where do we put this? Are we talking about this Golden State Warriors team?
This is a good transition into the top 76 players of all time. So how
and
do
then
we
we'll talk a little hockey before we take a break. But
how many? Where do you put this team in with the greats?
Are we talking San Antonio Spurs, Duncan Robinson? You know, not Duncan Robinson, but Tim Duncan and David Robinson.
Ginobili, Parker. Yeah, and then it ended up with Kawhi. That's a crazy.
Amazing.
Yes, I do. Right below them. Yeah.
Right below them.
How many did they win? Five?
Four.
Did they win five?
I think they won five.
I think they might have won five.
Yeah. And so
these guys are foreign. Do you think they could do it again next year?
I don't ever predict. Don't ask me to predict.
Listen,
don't ask me. Whatever you're doing.
Will you please?
Do you want to predict whether or not you'll predict anymore?
Blew the whistle on me. I feel like Klay Thompson wasn't even in full, like, wait till Jordan Poole continues to grow.
They got five. 99,
chips,
2000.
Five chips.
99, 2003, 2005, 2006. So 3 to 6, they were dominant with only not getting one in 4, and then they got one in 14.
Wow.
So, yeah. I remember they against Miami, right?
Yeah. So that team over the span of that career, I think this team was more dominant
in a tighter space.
Because they had that winning season, the 72.
So the 72 game season where they didn't even win the finals because Cleveland beat them. And so, like, they were a part of, like, so many epic series. Like, being a part of –
this solidified the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
This win. Because there was a – you had the KD situation.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
This is like the win that Kobe got without Shaq. So Kobe's like, let me sort of solidify my Lakers.
Or
legacy.
The win that Shaq got without Kobe in 2004.
Right.
Or 2005. You know what I mean? When the
Heat
won, that team won. It's like
with Dwayne Wade.
Dwayne Wade.
So like I would put this obviously the Miami.
Yes, I would put him in it. Yeah, well, it's so a the Miami
Heat
dynasty
with Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, and LeBron James went four times in a row or five times in a row. I think they went four or five times in a row and only won two. They're below this Warriors
definitely
team. This Warriors team,
and
is
I would
a
put
team
the Pistons, the early '90s Pistons, below this team. But I think you have to.
You're
put...
You're talking about the Chauncey Billups one.
Yes, yeah, yes. Okay.
So the Lakers.
No, no.
Won
I'm talking about the Bill Laimbeer.
Oh, the
back to back
Isaiah one.
Yeah, back to back. '90.
How many? The Lakers won four.
Five.
They won
five in the '80s.
In the '80s.
Yes.
And they went to.
This was
seven.
This was a crazy. There wasn't a finals in the 80s that didn't have Boston
or
LA.
The Lakers. Right. That was their
thing. I believe that's correct.
That is correct.
So, but do you put the Boston team, the Boston Bill Russell teams above the
80s? Yes, that's
80s?
The number one.
That's the number one
in
team
my
of
opinion,
all time.
In my opinion.
Boston 60s, 1960s Boston.
Then
like,
Bulls teams.
You're talking about 11 out of 13. They won 11. Yeah.
Then Bulls teams in the 90s.
Then Jordan's
and
Bulls.
And then right below them.
The Utah Jazz. I'm sorry.
and then right below that, am I
Lakers or Celtics? Who do you put above whom?
Oh, I see. Oh, I see. That's Celtics.
80s Celtics over 80s Lakers is what you're saying.
So 80s Celtics only won three times, and they lost two others, or they lost one other.
That hurts me so much.
So I think you have to say Lakers. So it goes Celtics at the top from the 60s, then the Bulls from the 90s, then you go Lakers 80s, Celtics 80s. And then I think you're at a spot where you could
go San Antonio Spurs.
I'm with you 100% on
and
this.
Then Golden State Warriors.
I'm trying to think if Golden State is above 80s Celtics.
That
or the
Spurs
or
are
the
above, above 80s Celtics.
So on those 80s Celtics, Kevin McHale is a Hall of Famer and Larry Bird is a Hall of Famer and is built. And then I don't know who else is on that team who was a Hall of Famer.
The pot smoking center.
Oh, Bill Walton's a Hall of Famer?
Bill Walton is a Hall of Famer, and
Robert Parrish.
Yeah,
Chief.
Parrish.
He's a Hall of Famer.
He's
okay.
A Hall of Famer.
So
and I think, did Dennis Johnson get
no, he's not. Dennis Johnson is not
But he starred in the movie Beetlejuice.
That's right. He was amazing. So
that's a good question. That is a good question, and it pains me.
To figure
because, but let me, can I throw this out as a possibility?
Yeah,
this is off the top of my head. It might be stupid, but it because the Celtics had a face the dominant team of the 80s times.
Good point.
And maybe this team hasn't had to face.
I disagree. This team had to face the Warriors team. You're talking about the Warriors team. Warriors team had to face LeBron and the Heat. That was a formidable team that won two championships.
Yeah, that's true.
They had to face
but
that
they also
Heat
beat
and the Cleveland team.
And LeBron on the Cleveland team.
That,
I mean, those teams
Cleveland
weren't
team
good, but LeBron.
Good?
But
wasn't
LeBron.
That team like coached by like a Jewish guy from Israel or something?
Yeah, that's right.
David Blatt.
David Blatt.
You remember David Blatt. The Blatts are coming over.
He's brought his own Kugel. Is it weird?
You have to come down and you have to talk to them. You have to tell them what you're doing.
Your bit about David Stern.
But that guy, so I, right, that's if you think LeBron is, okay.
So, I mean, it brings, to me, I love it because baseball is usually where we argue about stats this and that. And it's because the numbers are so holy. Basketball is more where you would talk about all-time great teams and all-time great
players.
Or the
eye test. You kind of like start to look at the
team. Different. It's a little different.
It's fun.
I do notice, and a guy, again, I wrote this book on Pete Maravich. Pete Maravich's advanced stats. I don't know if you're familiar with all the WAP and all of that stuff.
I'm not. I know what they are, but I don't know specifically what advanced stats.
Okay, yeah. He doesn't do well in advanced stats.
Why? Because he doesn't play defense?
Because
he was crazy?
Well, because postseason success was limited.
Sure.
And he shot a lot of turnovers and
so
things like that.
Advanced stats for Draymond Green would be better than...
I think so. You know, the plus minus? Are you familiar with
this
at all?
Defense. How many points are scored while you were on the court?
Right. Yeah. So it's... Yeah. So those kind of stats, they look into it, and Pete doesn't do great in that. Right. So I'm ending up having a lot of, like, discussions with people about whether he deserved to be on the top 75. I'm not trying to get to there.
So let's get to there
but
real
before
quickly.
We do, but I'm just saying, in basketball, I feel like those stats aren't as applicable as they are in baseball.
Right. I understand. Yeah. So then so that goes back to the Draymond being.
Yes, yes.
All right,
yes.
So top 75, what are we thinking?
First of all, it was 76.
Right.
There was a tie.
Who was tied?
There was a tie.
So won the play-in? 76. What did you think? Who was
first of all? Just so you know how into this I am.
I'm so excited.
In 1996 mm-hmm. for the 50th anniversary of the NBA, although not actually the NBA. It was the BAA before it was the NBA. Just so people know what I'm talking
you
about.
You have a BAA in NBA.
Yeah, yeah. So I...
You signed an NDA
from
to not talk about that
from UMB.
Yeah, yeah. So, I went to Cleveland and paid the most money I've ever spent on a sporting event ticket in my life to sit fifth row of that event.
Wow.
The 50th anniversary.
Amazing.
$600.
That's an insane. That's today. That's an insane.
It's worth $6,000 today.
$600. Guess where I got it from? Through a broker, but guess who sold it?
Who? Steve Landisberg.
No, it's like the Pump Brothers. Would you know what that is at all?
No.
Okay, they're like shoe guys. They're in love with that whole world.
Reebok Pumps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the Pump Brothers.
I don't know if it's Reebok. Brothers. I don't know what it was, but I had a hunch you guys would know. But
I don't know. But I've heard of them. All right, blow us a follow on the Pump Brothers. So who?
I was there. I was into that list in the 96 when... That the original 50. So, all of those guys made it to the 75.
But they got jostled around a little bit by other people.
No, it was not. There's no order to it.
Oh, it's just a list of guys who belong.
Yeah,
so,
I'm sure there are people calling
for basically, the order. And I understand the thought process because you had like, because I listened really carefully to people who were voting on this list. Michael Wilbon, you know that dude.
Yeah.
So he would, you know, like players that were playing today voted on the list and like they were like, wait, it's hard enough to judge the people we
who
played
are there
against.
Right now. Yeah.
Yeah, how am I gonna, you know, Paul Arizin versus Tracy McGrady? It just seems impossible.
Right.
So they're just like, let's not even think about the 50 and work on the 25 over the last 25 years. And they came up with 26 and corrected a couple mistakes of the early list.
Okay,
yeah. So it was really exciting.
Where did they get it right? Did they mostly get it right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's impossible.
Who's on the list that you're like, this guy's Dan Aykroyd?
Well, this is the one. This was the weird one for me is Carmelo.
Yes.
Carmelo and Damian Lillard are the two that made the list where I'm just like.
Damian is
But Dave DeBusschere made the list.
Okay, it's Dave DeBusschere. He's from the 50s. I love that.
Dave DeBusschere also won in 70 with the Knicks, 69-70.
This is the big question, and we can apply it to now.
He would never play a single minute
today. That's not, a thing. But
that is a thing.
Oh, it is?
No, I think it's not. Dolph Schayes made the list.
Jewish.
That's good.
Jewish. Adolf. I think the only Jewish guy on the list. Wow. By the way, but that's all from the top. Again, the 50.
Rodman's on the list.
Yeah, Rodman made it.
Of course he did.
You put the second or third best player on a championship team? Like
this is
the Draymond question.
Or Klay Thompson.
Yes, Klay Thompson did not make the list.
He didn't make the list because...
I think if it had happened this year...
But Dave Cowens made the list.
I mean,
two times champion.
Klay Thompson's a four times champion.
Okay, but
is Willis Reed on that list?
Yes, Willis Reed is on that list. There's a New York bias. I know you guys are from the Midwest.
Earl Monroe is on the list.
You can feel that, right?
Earl Monroe is on the list.
Pete Maravich made the list.
Yeah,
Clyde the Glide, George Gervin, of course. Yeah. Reggie Miller, of course.
Stockton, of course.
Reggie Miller's an interesting one because Reggie Miller like had like a charm campaign to get him into the Hall of Fame and on this list.
Oh, he's a Hall of Famer. I don't want to hear it. He really was a Hall of Famer. No, they never won, but those teams, those Indiana teams were so good. I mean, it's like, would you put Patrick Ewing in? Those Knicks teams never won, but he's on the list.
He's on the list.
Definitely.
And I actually think Patrick Ewing was more disappointing as a pro player than he was a great college player, and I thought he was like a good pro player.
They won one chip at Georgetown, right? He won.
Yes. So he's won a championship, and he was an amazing player, and I thought he was great on the Knicks. But like, you never counted on him to win. Like the same way you're like, put the ball in Steph's hands, he's gonna shoot it and score. And like, Ewing's shots were to me, his whole career was defined by the shot he missed.
Paul made the list.
Yes.
Chris Paul
made the
list.
Tricky.
There's going to be, so I think on the 100 list, which is in 25 years, hopefully you're still doing a podcast.
Probably not. Anyway, I hope.
So anyway, it's, I don't know. So I think maybe Clay will be on that list.
I bet he will.
But the interesting one was like Damian Lillard.
KD's on that list?
Of course. Yes. Well, that's a gift.
But is Kyrie on that list?
No.
No.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very
And Kyrie hit the biggest shot. in Cleveland history, right?
But like, it's a very well-rounded list, and he doesn't like things that are
round.
It's a flat earther.
Flatten it out. Flatten out that list.
So anyway, it was fascinating. And then other magazines, USA Today had their
Jason
own list.
Jason Kidd on that list?
Yes.
Dirk Nowitzki, of course.
Of course. So these are the new additions. These all have to make it, right?
Does Luka make that list eventually? He doesn't now, but does he?
Giannis did, but not Luka.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And Luka, I think, will be there.
He'll be there.
Luka has the potential to be a top 10 of all time.
I think to me, Luka.
He's going to have to win five championships.
He doesn't have the team. Luka, to me,
What if he never wins what I call a chip?
He came closer this year than in years past. With the right players, I think he could. I think Luka is the closest thing to Larry Bird we've seen. A confidence in his shot, a chance.
You have to do white on white, right? Can't be any other player.
I mean, who else
is
would it
that
be?
Really real?
Oscar Robertson.
PJ Tucker.
Oscar Robertson.
I don't know.
I don't know. All right. Blow the whistle on me. All right, let's quickly talk about hockey because I know you're from Florida and there are like, I don't know, 27 teams from Florida that don't deserve to be in the
NHL. When I grew up, there was no...
Zero.
There was
nothing. Atlanta Flames you had for a brief period.
Yeah, but there was no hockey team in Florida and there was no basketball teams in Florida when I was a kid.
That's right.
We only had ABA teams. Like there was only the Dolphins.
You had the Orlando Sentinels.
And no baseball.
No baseball.
No baseball. Just the Miami Dolphins.
And spring training.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that was it. It is mind-blowing.
So you had the Miami Dolphins and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, right?
Yeah, the Bucs in 77.
But even when I was a kid, there was no Buccaneers.
No.
Yeah, so it was, yeah, that there's a hockey team that won back-to-back titles in Tampa, and they got this, I don't know.
They've won three out of the last five. I mean,
dominant.
You talk about dynasty.
Yeah,
teams.
I don't know if they can do it this year. They're really beat up. The Rangers
really beat up, and you know
we play as Blues fans. We watch the Blues play the Avalanche, and the Blues took them to six games and almost took it to overtime in the sixth game. Like they could have won and taken it to seven games,
and then you never know what's going to happen in the seventh game. But that Avalanche team,
it's like an Avalanche.
It is. McKinney scored that goal before the Blues won that incredible overtime game where they came back. And I was like, this is the best goal I've ever seen.
Coast to coast, went around guys like they were cones. It was like how you used to watch Gretzky
play, like through his legs. And I'm like, the Avalanche has three guys like that. That can do all that sort of skating.
I know. Anyway, I think they might be out.
I'm happy that it's this is what I'm happy about. Denver is a town that gets snow. There is winter weather there. Yeah. So, play
hockey.
They
had the Colorado Rockies. Remember, their hockey team in the 70s.
Right. You're talking about the mountains or the team?
I'm talking about the team.
Oh, okay.
So we don't know. We're recording this on Monday. Colorado might sweep them. I don't think they're going to sweep them. I think when this drops on Friday, the series will probably still be going on because I think Tampa Bay is good enough to at least win one or two and maybe jump back into this. You never know.
At the Thunderdome, that's where they play.
You said they came back on the Rangers from down 0-2 and then they won that series. One's ever done it twice.
I believe.
Takes a lot of energy. That's like when you see in an NBA game, everyone's like, it's a game of runs.
You're down 25.
It isn't.
What do you mean by that?
So I think it takes so much energy for most teams. Mm-hmm. I think more often than not, teams can make that run to get them back tied or within two or three,
and then they look up and they're down by 16. And they're like, maybe you close the gap to 8 at the end of the game and you did a good job of closing a game that looked like it was over.
But the truth is it takes all your energy just to get close.
So you feel like momentum is overrated?
I think that... When they say it's a game of runs, I think if you go up by enough in the NBA, I think it takes
everything.
Even
if they make the run to tie it, you're going to win.
That is true, because usually the team that is up by at halftime in the NBA wins like 90% of the games.
I didn't know that stat. That's fascinating.
Yeah. But don't forget, that's also blowout games. Also, those teams are up. But usually... With all the the drama, it's
interesting.
Do you know Lawler's Law by any chance?
No. Oh, let's do this, then we'll take a break.
Andy Kaufman will come up and slap you on David Letterman. Is that Lawler's Law?
No.
Throw coffee in your face.
No, this is the long-time announcer for the Clippers.
Yes.
Okay. His law is first in NBA, first team to 100 wins.
Wow.
And it's like that. He's like at a 98%.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, really. Yeah, the first team to get to 100 usually wins.
Remember those like Phoenix teams, like the Paul Westphal teams that would score like 149 points. Like that to me is insane. Like our Nuggets teams score like 138.
Paul Westphal's son.
Yeah.
Was in this movie that you got me into.
So, okay, let's talk about that on our Patreon. I actually have a different Patreon thing, but whatever. Wayne Fetterman is with us, and we'll talk about what we want you to promote on the other side of this break. We got some quick hits. This is View from the Cheap Seats. Don't go anywhere.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. We got Wayne Fetterman with us. And before we get into what we want you to see that he's a part of and ways to support him, we want to mention to you guys we are doing a live show here.
Stand-up show, a headlining set at the Huntington HB Rec Room.
Have you ever done that room?
Not yet.
You absolutely should. When we go down there, we'll tell him you
should
do it.
Maybe he should come down and do it with us.
Maybe.
I mean, you're a headlining, so it doesn't matter. But they can see you and see what you
do. I'd love to.
So good. We set it on this show. Can we set this and do this right now?
What's the date?
Saturday, the 23rd of July.
Yes.
Great. Wayne Fetterman, you're coming down.
Guest star.
Yeah, you're going
to guess that.
You'll do 30 piano. Minutes. You'll do 20, 30 yeah. ahead of us. All right?
So, yeah.
Wayne Fetterman. And then they'll see how great you are, and then you'll start heading
Wayne back. Fetterman will be our guest, and it will be a fantastic show. Huntington Beach Rec Room on the 23rd. We're going to be doing our podcast, Dumb People Town, live in Nashville with Steve Poltz, the singer-songwriter who wrote a bunch of songs with Jewel and whatnot, and then Dusty Slay, fantastic comedian who's got a great special on Netflix. That will do that at the
October 13th. That's a Thursday night at the Hutton. Let's sell it out.
Analog Room, and then on Friday night we'll be in Chicago, and then on Sunday night we'll be at the Bell House in Brooklyn doing a live Dumb People Town. Cut Worms, I love this band so much. This guy Max Clark is the lead singer of the band, and that's who it is. He's going to be playing and doing music, and we're solidifying the guests, but that's going to be great. All of that will be out, and we'll get the ticket links and all that stuff. Supersclars.com. Let's talk about Wayne. Want people to see the Carlin documentary because I just loved it.
Talk about it a little. What did you glean out of it?
I'm still watching it, so I don't want to give too much away. No spoilers. I don't know how it ends.
The most amazing stuff to me was when he went out into the woods. As Patton very brilliantly and eloquently speaks about it, he kind of started doing stuff that folded in on himself a little bit, where he's like, you know, the biggest thing is the 7 words you can't say on TV, and then he's starting to like parse like what are peas and why are we using why do we eat peas, and like it's just he kind of got ridiculous and got slammed for it. I'm like, why are you slamming George Carlin? Like, but I think
how about that clip from SCTV? Had you seen that?
Oh my God, I'd never seen that. That was vicious, like on him, and he kept evolving, and maybe evolved to a place that was uncomfortable for other people, like certainly Stephen Colbert and you.
And me, yeah.
The place where he's talking about just letting tons of people die.
Yeah.
It was similar in certain ways to the
Bill Burr
just let cruise ships go out and sink them type of a thing. But it was less pointed, but it was still very pointed because to like just random people. But
well, he was voicing a lot of like our deepest, darkest thoughts that we would, I think, have the thought sometimes.
But what's interesting to me is that there were certain moments when he's doing stand-up where he, even in a theater, the people that are coming out to see him to hear those thoughts, he lost control of those crowds a little bit. Like, they're yelling and screaming. I'm like, dude, this is a theater show, and they're yelling and screaming. This isn't a late-night show at, you know,
the cellar at like 3 a.m. Yeah.
Definitely attacked people's like core values, like core belief systems.
He was a great, and the whole thing was fascinating to me, how he started in a team, how he had to reinvent. I connected to it because he had to reinvent himself so much. He reinvented himself by going on the John Davidson show. John Davidson, who looks exactly the same today.
I mean,
he looked exactly the same, but like he...
I think you're confusing two different things. He did the John Davidson show early on when he was a guy, and then he went to Tie a Yellow Ribbon. What's that guy's name?
Oh, Tony Orlando. That was later, but I mean, but he very, very vocally spoke about how he did not love what he was doing on the variety show.
But it wasn't
like the true him, but he needed to do it to make money to get out in LA.
He wanted to be an actor.
He wanted to be an actor. All that stuff.
Do you guys, does that resonate with any of you here?
Yeah. I mean, speaking of acting, you just acted in a movie about Nat Sweetwater Clifton. Unbelievable. And then you
book a generous. This never happens. Let me just say this. We are usually the people who give other people jobs, and I once complained about that to
you
someone.
Did?
Yes,
who
I said.
Did you complain to?
I forgot who I said it to, but they said, "It sounds to me like you get jobs that give other people the opportunities.
You can't give people
not
jobs.
Not everybody gets the kind of job that can give someone else a job. So you guys tend to, and that's kind of right about us.
So it was a compliment.
Right. Yes.
So you were complaining. You got
I was
a compliment.
Complaining and
right
I was
back.
Like, hey, yeah, no one ever turns around and gives us a job. And it does happen once in a great while, but we tend to do it more. The thing is, Randy and I don't get a lot of jobs like, hey, be on this little thing, be on this little thing. We tend to say, hey, here's your own show. You can grab who you want to come in and do mm-hmm. it. And that happens once every 7 or 8 years, but we get that opportunity. So when it comes back to us in the form of a gift from a friend.
So you played the referee in the Globetrotter scenes with Kevin Pollak, who plays Abe Saperstein.
Right. Were you on a court, on the court, or this was in the locker room?
No, on the court. Actually, before, when he gives the money to the players and the thing, and then referee the game, and then do some Globetrotter stuff.
Oh, so you get...
I get humiliated a little by the
that's
Globetrotters.
That's so fun.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
well,
so
hopefully
fun.
That'll work. You know, I mean, it never. Seems a little choreographed, but we'll see. We'll see.
I mean,
but I was thrilled. I was,
that's you know, what the Globetrotters do.
And I'm assuming on the set in the moment, they
someone
were like,
said, we just lost a referee
for this other thing. We need someone. And Wayne's like, I know who can do
is
it.
Is that what happened?
No.
Tell us what happened. Are you allowed to?
No, the director. I know the director because I played basketball with him.
Amazing.
So I didn't even audition for this role.
It's great.
He brought it. He goes, it's a small thing. And it's like when you're a referee in a basketball game and you have this, it's a little bit of a glorified extra work because you're in so much. You have to be in all the basketball scenes.
Sure.
And then you have one like interaction or something
that.
So he brought me out. I did the thing. I was thrilled. I have not
Amazing.
Worked in a long time.
Right.
Like, COVID, it was terrible for
right.
me in that
for
way.
All of us. Yeah.
The millions of people died bad, but my career, it's, awful.
Let's talk about the real problem with what happened with COVID here. Yes.
I was not booking. I just
I mean, you know, no one understands it better than us.
You're on a respirator, but my career is having trouble surviving everything.
My IMD star meter was
down.
Taking,
I don't like seeing a red arrow. I don't know if you can relate to that.
I don't know if you can relate
whatever,
to anyway. A million Americans. Yeah. So anyway, so I was thrilled to get it. And then after I was done, it was fun. Like a couple days maybe later, he just called me up and he goes, listen, we have the big games at Madison Square Garden and I have one ref. I need another referee. Could you recommend anyone? I'd like a funny guy if possible. And today, the shoot, you guys were the second guy. There was another guy, Matt, who I play basketball with. I thought of him. He was not available. And then I went to you guys.
I love that you went to me. You came to me.
Yeah.
Then I thought to myself, you know what? I worked more days on Shadows and was able to come get my insurance. And then I was like, Jay should do it. If it doesn't matter which one of us. And Jay did it. And it was a gift of all gifts that he was able to do it because
I know. And by the way, the director had since called me and talked about how Jay was just
crushed.
Incredible. Everyone was shocked. I was shocked. The crew was shocked.
You're joking, but I do think they were surprised because I don't think they expected a lot
Certainly
out of
not.
This role. And I think, you know, because of the nature of the role, you know, I've scenes with like Jeremy Piven is the coach of the Knicks and Cary Elwes is there.
Yeah.
You start getting into like an on-court argument and they want it to be alive and real. And Martine, who was the director, was like, just, you know, go with whatever he does. And I know that Jeremy comes from a theater, his family's theater, where play is really important. So as soon as he starts going, then I'm going with him. And we just start improvising a very real argument on the court. And my sort of like, it's almost like the objective kicked in. It felt very much like when I did Curb Your Enthusiasm, which was the objective to get this guy off the court is my main, and to not want to really give him a technical foul. I don't want to. So that was the thing. When I auditioned and got the argument scene with Larry about the folding of the sweater and Curb Your Enthusiasm.
You don't want to throw him out of the store.
You don't want to. So he's a customer. So I heard other people auditioning and immediately they went to this crazy place of like, get the fuck out of here. And like that sort of.
You want to make a sale.
So I want to make a sale. Yeah. I also am like, What if, try not to get in an argument with this guy. Try as hard as you can. Right. That gives you so much more to work with. Like and
more that you're against.
Please, I mean, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do it. And there was an ad lib that I did. I'm not giving away. I don't even know if this makes it in the movie. But like, I slap him with the tea eventually because he just takes me that to that place because he won't shut up.
So this is a reluctant tea.
Reluctant tea. And as I'm walking away.
That's what this is.
It's a reluctant t-shirt. I'm walking away and I'm like, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to do it. I just say that. Didn't want to do it. Yeah, didn't want to do it.
I love it.
And they loved that moment.
They loved it so much that Cary Elwes comes over and is like, can I argue with
you? Yeah, he's like, there's a moment later where I think I want to make that a bigger moment. And I was like, yes, let's make it a bigger moment. Then I get into this later moment with him and we get into it. And afterwards, I'm like, hey, I'm sorry. I know that was like kind of on your single. It was on both of us, but like, I was talking over a lot of what you were doing. I didn't want to spoil what you were doing. He's like, no, it was real. It was real, and we needed real. And I'm like, all right.
So the opportunity to do that, given to you, to me, that I passed on to my older brother.
It was a little disappointing you couldn't do it.
I mean, he had the mustache.
Everyone was just had to show.
And you had to show. Oh, by the way, button for the whole story.
Yeah.
On the film, I already have a very special thank you because I got you in that movie.
You got a thank you in the movie. Oh, yeah, great.
Yeah,
I love it.
That's going to be in the credits.
All right, let's jump into some quick hits,
also, Jeremy Piven also did one thing where he gave my character a name.
That's great.
He gave, instead of just ref number two, he gave my character a name on the
scene. All right, let's jump into some quick hits. Klay Thompson, after winning it all, decided to take a shot at Jaren Jackson Jr. Did you see that? Of the Memphis Grizzlies, who tweeted in the regular season game where Memphis beat the Golden State Warriors and were feeling it because they were like the two seed.
Right.
I don't know where Golden State wound
strength
up.
In numbers, right?
Strength in numbers. He was like, I mean.
What does strength in numbers mean?
It means we slew all of us together. Like team effort, we beat you.
Why is that?
Because it's a moment where you go, it's almost like.
You're not so bad.
It's the moment where someone blocks someone and they fall to the floor and then you step over them. Don't need to step over the guy.
You won the game. You don't need to just tweet about it afterwards. And Klay Thompson was just
Feel like that's such a benign.
It is benign.
It wasn't like,
Klay's response here is feels
insane.
Petty.
No, okay, Klay is, you want to talk about petty. We were talking about this earlier. Exactly. He's like, I can't wait to retweet this when we win it all. He was like at a press conference, remembered like the disrespectful tweet. Nobody paid attention. Who's paying attention in the regular season to anything? They certainly don't pay attention to playing defense in the regular season, okay? It's the most petty thing. I guess that's what fuels guys, right? The motivation
of
doing that.
Jordan had that thing, right?
Yes.
Klay took a lot of time at the press conference to call out Jackson, call him a clown, say he doesn't know shit. It was a petty beef that I have to say, in the end, I was there for. Mm-hmm. I was there for that petty beef. I'm like, this is kind of. Then Ja Morant and Khalil Wright tweeted that they were living rent free in Klay Thompson's head. To which Draymond then tweeted back at them, we traded real estate in for property in Boston. It was more expensive. I mean,
That's good.
Can't wait. I would love to see this discussion get into a 15-year locked arm.
Yes.
Don't forget, if I'm not mistaken, Memphis knocked Golden State out of the bubble.
Right.
In the play-in. I don't know if it was the year
after. It was the year they were down. I mean.
But they were still close to making it into the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so,
It's just great. Anyway, so you're there. I'm there for that sort of a beat.
No, I do. I didn't know about all of that back
then. Isn't that crazy that Draymond then jumps in? Of course Draymond jumps in.
Amazing. But you would think, does that help you as a player if you have that kind of motivation?
If I'm Ja Morant, I'm dunking, literally putting my nuts in his face the next time I dunk on Klay Thompson in the thing. I mean, I thought Memphis was fun. They're like a couple. I would love to see Luka go to Memphis and just see that team.
They become a crazy super team.
All right, we all love a bad tattoo. What makes a tattoo bad? The artwork. The message.
Where you put it.
The
location.
The
size.
Disney character on the small of your back.
Spelling.
Is good. All these
punctuation.
All these questions can be answered by our friend Jesse May Peluso, who does that great show on Netflix about the bad tattoo redo or whatever it's
so
called.
Funny.
I can't remember the name of it. But we're talking about sports tattoos. Mm-hmm. That tends to be, they're usually gotten in a very drunken state after a game, right? Like you're so drunk that you're happy that you won, or you think about that prematurely, a lot of bravado.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about athletes getting tattoos.
Or people, fans.
Yeah,
so
fans.
It's never really fully thought through. And this is my theory. 35% of all tattoos are not thought through at all. People just
spontaneous.
Go in.
Yeah.
Go in.
Here.
Impulse buy.
Impulse buy.
Yeah, like gum at the checkout line.
The
or
extra, that gum, the
People
extra,
Magazine or like the
icebreakers.
Icebreakers.
Little mints.
Little cubes, ice. Anyway, so like that is what it is. And
do I need beef jerky? It's right here.
They're not well thought out. 80% of that 35% has not been thought out at all. It's just like walking down the street. I'm not even thinking about getting a tattoo. I just see a tattoo parlor like, we should get one.
Of that 80%, how much is alcohol or drug related?
So I think that really, alcohol, drug related, that's of that 80%, that's probably 80% of that is alcohol, drug related.
Jeez.
Take, for example, the gigantic Boston Celtics NBA Champs 2022 tattoo that a Boston fan got tattooed on his arm. I think this
You're up 2-1, and he's like, I'm feeling it.
Time to get it.
I was feeling it, too, to tell you the truth.
I kind of was, too.
Yeah.
I think this guy leans into it.
Well, like, what didn't Jason Terry do a similar thing he was with?
He did, and he had to get it changed. He had to get it changed. That was amazing.
Was that when he was on Dallas?
No, like he won the championship. They beat Miami. They beat Miami.
When Dallas beat,
So he got one before they won.
I believe.
I think you're right. So to me, I think this guy leans into it. Like, and we're so close to this, like election fraud. He says, if a couple of bad calls, we should have won.
Yeah.
I'm claiming that we won.
Yeah.
What?
I'm saying like,
that's what he's going
to
do.
Isn't that the world we're about to live in where people are just like
no one can take an L anymore. Nobody can walk out. Like there was a we all take L's
all
the time.
All the time.
But I'm just saying. But like no one
in the world. Like
we have a pocket full of L's.
Pocket full of L's. You can't fire anyone anymore for fear that they're going to come back to the office and like blow it up.
Basketball, football, baseball. These are all games where the score is determined. The result is determined by the score on the field. I mean, gymnastics and figure skating, and that's like a little more boxing. There's a little more.
Right.
Fudge room in there.
Of course.
I'm just saying the NBA is all, but I do think we're going to come to a point where people in Boston are gonna be like, we won.
I don't accept it.
Maybe. I mean, yes. I mean, but that's a weird fanatic level.
Now, the LIV golfers played in the U.S. Open this past weekend, and they pretty much sucked. I mean,
they did.
None of them were on the leaderboard. It's like, to me, going to Thanksgiving dinner with your wife's family, your wife you just cheated on, and her whole family knows it. You know you're going to drop the gravy. You have the shakes. You know, you're going to four-putt the mashed potatoes across the old table. I mean, Phil Mickelson has done both. I mean, he's cheated on his wife and went to Thanksgiving dinner with her family, sure. And he defected to the LIV Tour.
Right. This is Liv Tyler, right?
Liv Tyler, yes.
All right, it's brutal. Okay, they were putrid. I'm going to just read the scores to you of the LIV players.
So this is a LIV thing, defectors. Like people feel like the PGA players are against them?
Oh, yeah, they are. So here, the Dustin Johnson was +4. Richard Blend was +8.
The winning was -6 or
minus
five?
-6. Okay, six. Fitzpatrick was Fitzgerald.
Leaderboard kind of went down to -2.
What an 18th.
I mean, the last five holes.
Richard Blend +8. Patrick Reed +10.
Unbelievable.
Bryson DeChambeau +13. Phil Mickelson +11.
You know why?
Epic four putt.
They're busy. They have a lot of extra money in their pocket.
Louis Oosthuizen +6. Kevin Na +5. All these guys +5, +4, +6, +6, +5.
But did any of them not make the cut?
Yeah. A lot of them did make the cut. Okay. Jedaiah Morgan was +16.
Wait.
And James P.
Jedaiah Morgan?
So Matt Fitzpatrick was -6.
There's an Amish player, Jedaiah Morgan.
Scotty Scheffler, who Jay and I said he should switch names with Xander Schauffele. He should be Xander Scheffler.
So wait, Scotty Scheffler joined the LIV Tour?
No. I'm saying here's what the PGA, the leaderboard was. So I read you all those other ones. +6, +6, +13, +11. The leader was -6. Scotty Scheffler was -5. Will Zalatoris, who I think is going to be the next breakout star, -5.
He was like an inch away from being
Hideki Matsuyama -3, Colin Morikawa -2, Rory McIlroy -2. So that's
Rory has come out big time for the PGA against the LIV Tour, and you can tell like he's almost embraced. Like this has codified the PGA Tour players who've decided to stay, who've issued all this money.
So what's going to happen on the Ryder Cup team? Are they going to be allowed to play for the country? Because that's not a PGA event. That's like a separate thing because you've got the two tours.
Right.
Are the people who, like, will Rory McIlroy play with Louis Oosthuizen? Or he wouldn't play with Louis Oosthuizen, but whoever he would play with on a European player who defected to the LIV Tour, would he play with him on the same team? Or would he take a stand and say, like, I don't want this asshole on the team?
It's This is one of those red state, blue state things, right? Crazy. Do you feel like it's that? Like, kind of. Can you even, it's like, I mean, it a core value or is it just like a business decision?
This is where it comes to me. And honestly, this is where I know a lot of people are like, hey, just let them do whatever they want to do. It's a free country. You can do whatever you want to do. Fine. But I ask myself, how much money do you need? How much money do you need? How much money do you need? All these guys listed at the top level of this thing.
Bryson, Dustin, all those guys.
They've all made enough money for entire lifetimes, for their kids, for their families, to leave for future generations. They've set it up. If you spend your money wisely and you still can live a crazy fun life with all the things you want, so maybe you buy a $12 million house instead of a $22 million house. Fine. Not a huge difference. Not a huge difference.
To them it is.
Maybe it is, but I'm just saying.
I don't look at it like
and
that.
You continue.
How do you look at
you
it?
Why? Because I feel like in every other sport, these players can get what the market
you think it's
from
what the market determines.
Yeah, what the market determines. Why are you mad at the market?
I'm not mad at the market. I'm not mad at the market. I'm just saying.
The market madness.
I'm saying that.
I'm mad at the market.
I'm saying there is a league in place.
Yeah.
Now, if, for example, the league was paying the players or putting a cap on PGA players' salaries in it, or what they're able to
Why
make.
Why are you against any competition? I don't understand.
I'm not.
To me, this is such a non. Like, I didn't.
I don't know. I just think like.
Because
what are you rooting for?
Because now
it's like rooting for Deshaun Watson.
I'll tell you why. Because both things end up diluting. Because both things end up. I'll tell you why. Because I watch golf.
You do?
Yes.
I don't, but keep going.
So I watch golf, and I want the best in the world in one place, in one league. That's what I want. I don't want to watch two diluted. I don't want to watch an 80% league and a 40%.
Can I time out?
Yeah.
To me, golf and tennis is about the majors, and I don't care about any of these other. I don't care about Wingfoot and all
so,
of
but
those
I
stuff.
Do. I do. I think the waste management
that's
one
fun.
In Phoenix, the
that's
Phoenix
fun.
Open.
Phoenix.
I think the is great.
That's a tournament.
It is. I think the TPC Sawgrass, like the Players Championship.
He doesn't care.
I care about maybe Ryder once in a while to do like a one-on-one match or something like that. And Major, that's all I care
about.
That's
you care about. But I'm saying,
oh, by the way,
time out.
When we talk about the greatest golfers of all time, we're only talking about We're only talking about
that's
Nicholas.
True,
but I'm telling you right now.
Talking about Greg Norman,
so
who is leading the league.
So let me make this.
Let me hear the counter.
Okay, I'll make an analogy to a sport that you love. All right, let's just say a Saudi-backed basketball league comes out. Yeah. All right, and they take like 40 players, not all the best players, but some great players, some really really top players, some players that are kind of past their prime. But the entire quality of the NBA goes down. Like 6%. Not a lot, but some. Okay? So now Damian Lillard's no longer in the league. I'm not saying he would choose, but he's out of the league. Kyrie's out of the league. Maybe Giannis goes. Maybe a couple other people go. It doesn't ruin the NBA. It doesn't bankrupt it full of talent, but it dilutes it a little bit. And then that other league is decent, but it's not great because it doesn't have all these other people. So now you got to watch two things that are slightly worse. Instead of watching the one thing and where the all the best come to do
the
best thing.
By the way, your example happened in my lifetime. It was called the ABA. And there was a team in St. Louis. You should be aware of it.
I know, but then the ABA reunited with the NBA. The quality of the NBA dropped in the 70s.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as fun to watch.
Yeah.
And then in the 80s, it came back together and you're like, this is better.
Yeah.
So I there you go.
Right, there you go. All right, there you go.
But the ABA wasn't backed by Saudi money trying to
no,
watch.
No, there is that.
Trying to,
sports
trying to whitewash, sportwash the murdering of a journalist.
Of an American journalist.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that. Is the element. That's the only element.
That's the thing that bothers
that
me.
That bothers me.
His name
but
is
the Liv Tyler part of it, though.
Okay.
His name is Wayne Fetterman. The documentary documentary is George. George Carlin. I want to say George
American
Carlin
dream.
Saves America.
America's dream.
George Carlin.
George Carlin's American Dream.
It's on HBO Max. So good. Check that out. Follow Wayne Fetterman at Wayne Fetterman.
At Fetterman on Twitter and Insta Fetterman on Instagram. And I also have a book out. You're in it, guys. It's called The History of Stand-Up from Mark Twain to Dave Chappelle.
I love it. Go pick that up if you're a stand-up comedy
fan. If you want to know about it.
It's a great
so good at all this
And then
stuff.
We're going to do a Patreon with him.
About Antonio Brown. So don't go anywhere. And when we come back from the break, we got a special voicemail. This is View from the Cheap Seats. Yeah.
Oh, Wayne Fetterman, just fantastic. I love him.
Get that Pistol Pete book and get the history of stand-up comedy, Wayne Fetterman. We're in it. We're in it, for Christ's sake.
And watch the Carlin documentary.
It's amazing. George Carlin's American Dream. And with that, we have a very special voicemail we want to just leave for you. Why not? It's the summertime. Enjoy it.
Jason, Randy, hey, Nicolas Cage here. That's right, it's me. Fresh off my box office domination with The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, guys, I'm back. Cage is back. And I've already got hired onto my next project, which, of course, comes after the next six projects I'm shooting. But here's the deal, guys. I've been hired by a very top secret sports organization. I can't say who, but just let me tell you that their name rhymes with PGA. Damn it, that's the name. The PGA has hired me to go out and to be a hitman and to go out and take out the Saudi Arabian man who's in charge of this LIV Golf thing that's happening. Guys, do I know anything about golf? No. Do I give a shit? No. Have I read up about this LIV Golf thing and actually think it's pretty cool because it's actually trying to stage like a coup and recoup and reinvigorate a sport that is literally played by like the oldest and whitest of people in the world? Then does that sound way more like something Nicolas Cage would be into? I mean, LIV Golf is actually promising shotgun starts. That screams Nicolas Cage. But you know what screams Nicolas Cage even harder? Money. So the PGA is paying me a lot more money than LIV Golf is paying me. So that's why I'm going to be taking out the Saudi. And here's the thing, guys. I'm going to be recording the whole thing on my iPhone 13S, which has got excellent depth of perception. I'm going to record the whole thing, me doing it, living life, and then it's going to be coming out in theaters next year. It's going to be called Take it back. Let's go back to one. It's going to be called Below Par, starring Nicolas Cage. Guys, this is what's going to bring me up over the top. I'm going to win an Oscar this year for The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, and I'll win my second Oscar next year for Below Par, and then I'm going to take on the fucking world. Here we go. Las Vegas Golden Knights. I just wanted to say it. Here we go.
All right, that's a show. We wish you guys all health and happiness as we barrel towards next week's show, which will be Joey Chestnut.
An interview with the greatest 4th of July athlete of American
recent history. Joey 14-time Chestnut. Nathan's Hot Dog Champion, Joey
it's
Chestnut.
An amazing interview with Joey Chestnut. And then the week after that, we have the annual, semi-annual music episode where we're taking songs that we found this year that didn't come from this year with Logic, Jonah Ray, Matt Price. It is an unbelievable episode.
The mid-year music episode, you're going to get a whole bunch of great music for the second half of your summer.
We love you guys. Have a great summer. Hope you're having a fun summer with your families and whatnot, traveling around, enjoying yourselves. And we'll see you on the 23rd at Huntington Beach with Wayne Fetterman at the HB Rec Room. We'd love to sell that thing out. So please, please, please get your tickets for that. And we'll see you next week. Punch a waterfall.
A podcast network.